Mitzvah Kuf Zayin, 107th Mitzvah is Mitzvah's Meshichas Kohanim Gedolim Umalachim B'Shemen HaMishkan. The Mitzvah of anointing priests, the high priests, and the kings with the anointment oil. So we don't normally associate the procedure of anointing someone with contemporary Judaism, but at one time in Judaism, that's what people used to do. They used to anoint with oil, and the ancient Near East was a very common thing that when you wanted to make someone, designate someone as a in a position of authority, you would anoint him or her, I suppose, although women probably were not in these positions in the ancient Near East much. Okay, lasos shemen hamishcha al ha'inyan shetzivso ha'torah lasoso. So we have to make the anointment oil in the manner that the Torah said to make it. Shenemar, and we're going to see later that this is not really applicable to us. We'll discuss later why. Shenemar v'yosisa oso shemen mishchas kodesh. You shall make it the oil of anointment of holiness. Shiamuchal nimshoch bo kol kohen gadol shiyisman. You're supposed to use it to anoint all the high priests that are ever going to be in the history, in the entire history of the Jewish people. Kol shekosu v'kohen gadol asher yutzak al rosho shemen hamishcha. When it discusses the high priest much later in Sefer Vayikra, it says the high priest, the greater priest, upon whom, whose head the anointment oil has been anointed. V'chein moshkin bo k'tzas hamlochim, we anoint them, anoint with the oil some kings, not every single king whoever is in the Jewish people, but certain types of kings, and he's going to go into the details later. V'gam, v'chein gam kein, moshku bo akelim shel beis hamikdash, they used it to anoint the vessels of the beis hamikdash. But the commentators here point out that it doesn't really mean the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't really use it to anoint the vessels in the when the permanent temple was built. It was only in the Mishkan, when the Torah specifically talks about Vayim Shach Oso. And the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert, at that time, they actually anointed all the vessels to consecrate them. But in the later temple, they did not. V'lo yitztarchu limshoach lasid ela ba'avoda yizkadoshu. And they, in the future, they won't need to be anointed. Rather, just by using them, they become kadosh. That it, since it pasuk in the Torah implies that just in their use, asher yisharsu bam b'kodesh, also that they shall use these vessels in holiness. So for that reason, we assume that just the use of these vessels in the Beis HaMikdash in the future consecrates them to be used in the Beis HaMikdash, but it was only the time of the tabernacle in the desert that they actually needed to anoint the vessels with the anointment oil. Mishor Shei HaMitzvah, the reasoning behind the mitzvah, Shirotza Kel Baruch Hu Shenase Pula B'Nafshoseinu B'Yom Shenala Lischanech B'Chvod Avodoso HaKedosha, that God wanted us to do a specific action on the day that we go up to do to create. Lischanech means to dedicate. We dedicate a new person or a new thing to for his holy worship. So toreh banu gedula v'shevach. So we should do an action that shows us the manner of greatness and high praise of this action. V'zeo meshichas hashemen, and so in the ancient Near East, though not so much nowadays. Now we have inaugurations with put your hand on the Bible and you inaugurate or whatever. I don't know how you do that for Kalim. But people have inaugurations or investitures, but in the ancient times, the putting oil on someone's head indicated that they were really of the highest stature. The only people who get anointed are kings and great ministers, great leaders. For the foundation blocks of the mitzvah, that was the reason. Part of the mitzvah is the making of the Shemen HaMishcha. Specifically, the mitzvah is to anoint people when necessary, but as we saw before, when we were talking about the Ketores, the incense, that there's no specific command to make the incense, it's just a command to offer the incense. And obviously, if you have to offer the incense, you have to make the incense. So here too, part of the mitzvah is that we should have the Shemen HaMishcha available in the Beis HaMikdash for when it's necessary. That when somebody is a great host or has a great household, so everything should be available. So it's not nice when your guests come. It's considered more mechubad. You're richer. You're more presentable when your guests come or you're playing host. Then everything is available right away. You have a huge stocks. But if somebody comes and he says, you know, I like 1992 Bordeaux vintage. And you say, oh, I have to run to the store to get it. Oh my gosh, how am I going to get one? You look online, you have to order, you have to pay exorbitant prices for somebody who's, some Meshuggah who's kept a 1992 vintage of this particular Bordeaux, and you have to get it and serve it to him. But if you, your guest comes and you say, and he says, I want, well, what would you like to drink? He says, I like a 1992 Bordeaux. He said, Jeeves. Jeeves. Yeah, Jeeves. Please go run to the cellar and get the 1992 Bordeaux. That's considered a much higher level of hospitality and of grandeur, a grandeur of a household. Dinei HaMitzvah. Dinei HaMitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah. Kigon Maise Hashem and Keitza Nasa. How was the oil made? Mor v'kinamon, kida, chamesh mil shekel mikol echad. So 500 shekels of myrrh and cinnamon. And kida is, the translation is a little bit unclear. What does the art scroll have? Custis or something? I don't know, some weird spice.
Custis, there's yeah. Rambam, yeah. Mm-hmm. Others say it's the cassia, katsia. Uh-huh. The Rambam and Rashi.
Yeah. Right, some say it's right. So we don't know exactly, I don't know exactly what that is personally, but some type of spice. Elisha kinamon, the cinnamon, nishkal bein shtei pa'amim laharbos bo shtei hachros. So you don't measure the $500 once. You measure in two batches of 250. Why? Because it's impossible to get an exact measurement. So here, if you take it twice half, you're more likely between the two to come up with the exact measurement than if you measured it all at once. Maybe there'll be a little more. You want to put a little bit more. Anyway, but that's the, you're more, you consider it more likely to get it right if you do it twice half rather than one would, rather than just to blow it all in one shot. The Chulam Nitzayim B'Iye Hodu. These are all found at the islands of India. Interesting. Or the Indus Valley, but not the islands off, whatever that is. V'shemen Zayis and pure olive oil. Shi'ur Hin. Shu'usneima Sarluk. So, what exactly is a hin? So, we know that a revius, which is the shi'ur for the cup, for the for Shabbos and Yontif, for Kiddush and Avdol and the Arba Kosos. So according to, although we try to be more stringent sometimes when it involves mitzvahs d'oraisa, so we know that the basic shear of a revius is approximately 75 milliliters or 2.6 ounces. So if a revius is a revius, like the name, is a quarter of a lug, so that times 4 equals 300, so a lug is 300 milliliters, and then 12 of those is a hin. So 12 of those is a hin, so that's 3,600 milliliters, so 3.6 liters of oil. A gallon, basically, okay.
How much?
In Torah measurements, I don't think in English units. I only think in metric, because all the books that discuss them are all written in metric. Does your article say exactly how
much? 16 grams.
16 grams.
And it was ground?
Okay, so this is what they used to do. They used to take it, for the way the Rambam describes it, is that they first used to, they took all the spices, they ground them up, and they put them in water. They made like a tea. Of all these things, they would soak it in water, not necessarily by cooking. But say they were telling me, there was, someone was telling me about this fad of, oh yeah, the Sagers, I think, were telling us about cold brewed coffee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's this new fad that coffee should be cold brewed by soaking the beans in water for a long time, or the grounds in water for a long time, as opposed to using hot water. So here, they used to cold brew. You have to heat it afterwards.
And I mean, isn't the hot water supposed to bring out the flavor?
Yeah, the hot water would do it faster, but if you soak it in...
iced tea. Well, maybe iced tea, you take the tea and cold water, put it in the refrigerator overnight. You know.
So it takes longer.
Yeah. You don't have to make that on Shabbos.
You'll get a different... And it makes coffee without heating it, then you should be able to...
You have to strain it, though.
Okay, we can't strain it, right?
Yeah, I can't strain it.
The cliche. Well, it
would be cold. No, you can cook something... What do you mean?
No, I'm saying if something gets cooked, so to speak, without
you're also allowed to eat
heat or hot water, then you should be allowed to use it on Shabbos.
No.
Without a cliche, anyway.
No, that's where you get that reasoning from.
Because you're not allowed to cook after something. What is the phrase?
Ein bishul.
Ein bishul achar bishul, but that's when something's cooked already.
But it's been cooked, it has the same. Consistency.
No. Something that... Yeah, but you're allowed to also soak a piece of celery in water overnight on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to cook the piece of celery. If it's raw, you're right. If something's cooked already, then it can't become cooked a second time. That's correct. If
Which
it's solid, but
you're allowed to take that cold coffee and heat it.
No.
Because
it's not cooked. It's not cooked yet. So if the liquids anyway, you're not allowed.
How long does it take?
Liquids anyway, heating them, even if they've been heated before, is a problem.
For water, you know, it doesn't matter how many times it's been heated, so forth. Right. Then it's the same thing at all. They're liquids.
It is the same?
Yes.
Right.
But how long did how long, this cold coffee business, how long are you supposed to soak
it? I've never done that with coffee. I've done it with
tea. I think overnight also.
Yeah.
It's like tea, and then maybe, is it like coffee essence?
It's less, judging from my experience with tea, it's less efficient. But part of the whole thing here is that when you, it ends up getting extracted into oil. And what happens is when you take spices, you put them in water first, that will, you know, sort of extract the water-soluble essences. It also maybe causes the swell, I think, a little bit. And then you know, probably the oil will, you know, so there's you're taking, you know, it's a more efficient way of getting the, you know, the...
Oh, interesting.
You
know, okay.
Right. So you have a water-soluble component, an oil-soluble component. So I gather this would be why they would use both water and oil.
Interesting. But I think they didn't put the spices then in the oil. They just took that water that where they extracted the...
That's right. Oh, I see. Oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah, so then they would take the water
that extracted
the stuff for the essence of the spices, and then they would mix that with the oil, and I wouldn't mix, okay? But then they would cook it. Then it says, v'charshiz bashel hakol kedei tzorko, then you cook the water with the oil, and then the water evaporates. That would make sense if you put it in directly in the oil also, but I don't think that was the case. It would go back to the, in other words, you added the water to the oil, and then the oil, you would cook it until the water evaporated, and you would just be left with the quantity of oil that was there originally.
Okay, so the only one, the water-soluble component of the spice.
Apparently, yeah. We have to... I would say we could do an experiment, but you're not allowed to make Shemen Mishra, which is a later mitzvah. Okay.
Also, we don't know what the custom...
Well, we could try a few different things. Okay. So your question is actually interesting because I saw once in a sefer that a very not so popular sefer on Hilchos Shabbos where somebody actually said that since you see that you could make tea without cooking, so you see that when just because in other words the whole question is we have a principle called kli sheni einam mevashel that if a vessel is taken, if there's something that's poured from the vessel that was cooked on the fire into a second vessel that was not on the fire, then that second vessel cannot cook things if you put it in, put something in it on Shabbos.
Regardless of the temperature. So if somebody spills some on you, then you're not allowed to complain, right?
The reason I looked up the sefer is I saw a reference to it in another sefer and said, oh, this rabbi was so amazing, like it's such a chaval, he's not so popular. Which could be, I'm just talking about, I didn't read the whole sefer, just talking about one thing that was written in the... So he writes. So the question. So exception to things that can be put in a klisheni are things that are called kale habishal, the things that cook very easily, cannot be put into a klisheni. So the Mishnah lists a few things.
Cannot.
You may not put them in a klisheni on Shabbos because even a klisheni will cook them because they cook very easily. So one of those things like salted fish and you know thin things that are they cook very easily. So the question is, there's a big machlokes about whether we should specifically limit ourselves to things that are listed in the Mishnah as Kali Habishal, or we should treat everything as Kali Habishal, because we're not sure what might be Kali Habishal. These quotes, you shouldn't put anything on a klisheni on Shabbos. And there's the middle shita, which is, if you see the thing, something cooks easily, so you shouldn't put it, you should assume it's Kali Habishal, and you shouldn't put it into a klisheni on Shabbos. The question is, the question is, what about tea? So tea, tea is not listed in the Mishnah. Instant coffee is different, but tea is not listed in the Mishnah as something that's Kali Habishal. So one shita will tell you, that's Rav Soloveitchik shita, perfect, so you don't have to be worried that it's Kali Habishal. One shita will say, no, of course you're not allowed to put tea in a klisheni on Shabbos because everything might be Kali Habishal. Everything is Kali Habishal. And the middle shita will tell you, of course you're not allowed to put tea in a klisheni on Shabbos because you look at it. It cooks. You put it in the klisheni, it cooks. If you take a steak and you put it in the klisheni, it won't really cook. But if you take tea and you put it in a klisheni, you see that it cooks.
And Rav Soloveitchik, of course, said he saw his grandfather make tea in this way.
Yeah.
He says, and his grandfather was a Shomer Shabbos and he knew how to learn.
So this rabbi wrote in the sefer that I was talking about. He says that he discounted the possibility that tea might be a kali habishal by observation, because you see that if you put tea in cold water, so it also brews. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not so pashut. I mean, if you put lots of things in water and soak it for long enough, they're also going to change somewhat, but it's...
Oh, yeah.
Right, so that's a little bit... So that proposition is very questionable. So it seems to me that according to the middle shita, that you judge everything based on whether you actually see it cooking in a klisheni or not, then it should, should be considered to be kali habishal. And so in that, based on that, one should...
salt?
So the question is, so according to both the machmir shita and the moderate shita, so tea should be considered to be kali habishal, one should not put it even in a klisheni on Shabbos. So then we have the question is, what about a klishlishi?
I thought there was no such thing actually as a klishlishi.
That's what we'll explain in a second. So what about a klishlishi? So let's say you take the water from the klisheni that was poured out from the vessel that was on the fire, poured into the klisheni, now you pour it into a klishlishi. So let's say you have a so can you put something that's a kali habishal, that's something that cooks very easily, in a klishlishi? Do we say klishlishi does not cook at all, or do we say that it does not even something that's kali habishal, or do we say that it's the same as a klisheni? The only thing that the klisheni is trying to convey is that it's subsequent to the kli that was on the fire. We don't say that there's a difference between sheni and shlishi and revi and chamishi and whatever. That's the smachluk is between Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said that the Mishnah Berurah doesn't talk about it at all. So you see that a kli shlishi has no halachos whatsoever associated with it. You can put whatever you want in a kli shlishi, including tea bags. So the Chazon, huh?
Or nothing. I mean, why?
So you can put everything. You can put anything in a kli shlishi. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, because he said the halachic literature doesn't really discuss. What a klishlishi at all. So since from the fact you see that it doesn't discuss it at all, you see that there are no halachos associated with it. So the Chazon Ish said the opposite. He said the halachic literature doesn't really discuss a klishlishi, so the klishlishi is the same as a klisheni.
Yeah.
What do you mean? It's not...
I'm saying logically, after all,
if you,
the Chazon Ish seems to...
There's something that everybody points out, not with all due respect to those who are lenient about this, is that there is one halachic, somewhat obscure halachic source that does discuss a kli shlishi, and it's the Sefer HaYireim, which is a book of mitzvot. So the Sefer HaYireim says that you talk about putting kali habishal, you can't put a kali habishal into a kli sheni or a kli shlishi. So the one rishon that who does discuss it explicitly is explicitly like the Chazon Ish, that kli shlishi is the same as a kli sheni. My Rabbi Willig also has a shtickel Torah that he holds that it all goes according. Part of the reason that a kli sheni is a problem is because it's not normal to cook something in a kli sheni. You cook something on the fire. So he says that, and so he holds that since the derech, since the normal manner is in fact to cook tea in a kli shlishi, that a normal manner is to cook tea in a kli shlishi. Let's say you have a vessel on the fire. Then you pour it into a pot. Then you have the pot at the table, and you pour that into individual cups. And then you put the tea in the individual cups. So then that's the derech that he holds that it should be forbidden to cook tea bags on Shabbos for that for that reason, because that would be still considered the normal method of cooking tea. So even no matter, but it's funny because briskers are normally known for all their chumras, but this is one famous kula. Briskers' kulas is that they cook tea in a kli sheni. But we don't have the brisker chumras, so we shouldn't have the kulas either. Yezez Zayin Hay 12. So that's the 12, that the midah of the shemen, the oil, was 12 lugim, which is a hin. V'yeser prateha.
Who says
he has a? Yeah. He has a. Right, Lidor is a kham, yeah. Mivorim v'perek rishon mikrisos. It's in the first perek of tractate krisos. V'noheges bizman habayis. This is applicable in the times of the Beis Hamikdash. V'imi mitzvos hamutolos ala tzibor kemo binyan habayis v'chila. This is one of the mitzvos that is the entire congregation of Israel is responsible for making the Shemen HaMishra, and we'll see in a second why we shouldn't all be get running up to do it right now. Okay. Mitzvah Kuf Ches, the 108th mitzvah. Also forgot to mention that there's one more person that you used for the Shemen HaMishcha for, which is the Kohen Meshuach Melchama, which is the Kohen who goes out to instruct the people what to do during the times of war. So that would be another... doesn't say... It's called Meshuach Melchama, so that's what we assume happens to it, although there's no specific command of the Torah to do that. Okay. Shaloi mitzvah kuf ches, shaloi yasuch zar b'shemen HaMishcha, that somebody who is not... supposed to be using the Shemen HaMishcha should not be anointed with the oil. Shalolim shorach b'shemen HaMishcha sh'asa Moshe ela kohanim levad. We should not use the Shemen HaMishcha that Moshe Rabbeinu made, only to anoint priests and the kohanim gedolim and the appropriate kings. Shenemar al besar adam lo yisach. It should not be anointed on the flesh of a person. And his bar, by the way, so if that's one of the reasons, this is also used to say that you're putter, you're exempt from punishment if you anoint an animal, because it's not Bisar Adam. It has to be, actually, maybe you have to be Jewish. You might have to be a Jewish person.
Why would you anoint an animal?
Because you're crazy, I don't know.
That's what I always do, I can't
tell. I might even have to be Jewish. I think it could be that the person...
But it doesn't specify man or woman here? So
like... No, it's of course man or woman, but it could be... it could be that has to be a Jewish. I forget the halacha for a second. Okay. V'nizbar b'kasuv shemisha moshach bo b'mezid chayev karis. If you use the Shemen HaMishcha to use as hand lotion to because your hands are dry, something like that, then you're chayev karis, you're liable for spiritual excision. Shenemar v'asher yitein menu al zar v'nichras. V'im nimshach bo b'shogeg chayev chatos kibu. And of course, if you do it by accident, then you are chayev chatos, which is the normal korban that you would do, you bring when you violate a mitzvah for which the punishment is karis. Kilomar shen chiluk bo bein hadal v'asher el adavar kavua hula kol. So some chatos change depending on, only for very specific averos, having to do a shvuas, but they have to, they change prices depending on how rich you are. But this, a chatos kavua, which is normally given for atonement for if you violate a commandment that's associated with karis, so that is a set price that no matter what your net worth is, you have to give the exact same korban. Right. The Minchas Chinuch also points out that probably the real Mashiach is going to be anointed with the oil also. Mishorshe mitzvah zo gamkein lahagdolas habayis v'chol asher bo, for the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash and everything in it, l'chein ein roi lehedyotos lishtamish vos v'ashem ha'nichbad sheba bayis. That it's not appropriate, that this oil is supposed to be the representative of the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash, so for you to use it for your own purposes is not appropriate. Only the priests and the kings were the leaders of the people. That if you deny someone access to something, then they're going to want it even more. They're going to be more excited about it. That when something is rarer, then they want it more. I guess that's why people like jewelry, because precious metals are rare. So they say, oh, it's nice and shiny and rare, and I want it.
Or if Coca-Cola costs the same as Buton Rothschild, people think it was just discussive.
Exactly. So, right, so you want people to be excited about the Shemen HaMishcha. We can't have that, we can't have that. So then when they finally bring it out, because they were going to anoint someone, wow, he's getting anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. That's amazing. Okay. Midine HaMitzvah. The halachos of the mitzvah, kion mash amru zichron halivracha, shechiv hakaris vakorban, einu ad sheyosuch menu shir kezayis. That you're only chayev hakaris, you only get the full punishment when you take an olive's bulk of the oil and use it, but you're not supposed to use even less, of course, because we have principle chatzi shir asur min haTorah, that even when there's a certain amount that you're only punished for, so for example, eating chametz on Pesach, it's only if you eat a kezayis, an olive's bulk, that you're chayev karis, you get the full punishment, but you're not even allowed to put one crumb of chametz in your mouth on Pesach. Midaraisa. V'shelochi evanu akasu elo al oso sh'asa Moshe velo al acher sh'yase shum adam. Because the real Shemen HaMishcha is only the one that Moshe Rabbeinu made. We're not really going to make Shemen HaMishcha again. That was the one Shemen HaMishcha that was forever. It was a gallon of oil, and you only use a tiny bit to anoint someone. So it's going to last, also because it's miraculous, but it was going to last forever. It's hidden somewhere in the... V'kabolo biyadeinu sh'nes nasebo sh'yaspik l'olam. That So the only people who get anointed are the high priest and the one, the Kohen gets, who gets sent out to war, like I said, and the kings of the Davidic line. So I, Shaul, was anointed. Okay, we're going to find that in a second. B'chol shar melochem einam nimshachem b'zeh Hashem en el b'shem en afar simon. That you use, you could anoint other kings, but you just make nice, pleasantly fragranced oil. It just, but it's not the official Shemen HaMishcha with all its things that are associated with it. So what does it look like when you do, what's the, how, what is the tzura? What, how does it look when you do, when you anoint a king versus anointing a Kohen Gadol? So basically, it says that the Kohen Gadol, you would put a little bit on his head right here, and then you would put some over each eye in the shape of the Greek letter, depending on how you, which how you want to pronounce it. English is called Chi, in modern Greek Chi, and in Greek, ancient Greek Chi, different pronunciations. So basically, it looks like an X. But the, some Rishonim draw it, the Rambam has it here this way, more like the letter C. The letter C, the English letter C, which I'm not exactly sure. So basically that means that you would take the oil from here, you put the oil on his head, you put some on this eye, and put some on that eye in the shape of a letter C. It doesn't make sense, but it's not what the Greek letter looks like. Well, the Christianity didn't exist then, so it wasn't... they couldn't stomach the X? Century. But it's hard to imagine. No, I don't think they would have intentionally changed it. It could be, I mean, there's an analogous situation to that is actually... the on the back of the knot of the tefillin shel rosh that goes right here. So in the way they used to make it in the times of the original way, in the times of Chazal, in times of Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever. So the back looks like a cross. So in Europe, it's not visible in the back. Oh, the way it looks like it's supposed to look like a dalid. Supposed to look like a dalid. So
on
how
the underside, it looks like a cross.
Right. So the really, it's supposed to look like it looks like a square, and then it has the ritzuas coming out of it. Right. I mean, some people changed it more nowadays though, to make it look like more the actual knot itself look more like a dalid in their opinion. But the original way is that it used to be like a square.
Yeah.
So in the back of that square knot, if you look, it's a box stitch. People use this in things all the time. Basically, it's a very simple. So in the back of the back stitch, or the back of the knot of the Keter Shel Rosh, so it looks like a cross. So what they did in Europe, where they couldn't stomach the idea that their tefillin would have a cross on the back, they changed the knot slightly. So they put like one strap around twice instead of around once, so it doesn't look like a cross anymore on the back.
Oh, actually, turns out the controversy over the letter chi was it Greek upsilon or upper capital upsilon?
It's
or
not
capital pi, lambda, or omega. So
but why? That's not the letter. It's not.
I don't know.
But that's not the letter. It looks like an.
Tosfos to Menachos.
I don't know. But the simple understanding. Okay, the simple understanding. That should be like an X. But why that should be the case? You don't need the X. If you just put it on the head, it looks more like a C. The only thing I forgot to check before is that there are all these weird Greek dialects that had funny scripts. I'm trying to think. Maybe I don't think any of them had a letter C that for the chi, the chi. But yeah, when I was in seventh grade, so my biology teacher made us learn the Greek alphabet. Very important skill. Everybody needs to learn the Greek alphabet. That's not a question. But that's just interesting that we did in seventh grade. Oh, the king, well, you put the oil on his head, and you made like the shape of a crown around his head. That's the way it works when you anoint the king. So all you need is the progenitor of the line. So David HaMelech was the progenitor of the Davidic line, so he required Meshicha, he required anointment with the official Shemen HaMishcha. So his son Shlomo, so you might think he doesn't need to be officially anointed. So why was he anointed? He wasn't anointed with the Shemen Afar Simon, with the nice man. Oh, he was anointed with the official Shemen HaMishcha. So why? Because there was a machlokis about him, who was going to be the next king. There was Adoniyahu, and before that, not at that time, but Avshalom, but there were other people who were pretending that they were supposed to be the next in line. So therefore, he was anointed with the oil because he was there was an issue about him, so they wanted to make clear that he was for sure the true and correct king, so he could be anointed. And that wasn't considered an improper use of the Shemen HaMishcha because it's still shayach to him. because he's part of the Davidic line, even though technically speaking he didn't need to be anointed. So it's, by the way, it's even if you yourself were properly anointed, you're still not allowed to take the oil from your body and put it on a different body part. Mm-hmm. He said that let's say the Kohen Gadol, right after his anointment, he had some dry skin that's on his belly, so he took some of the oil and went like this. That's also not permitted. Valken M. Shlomo, right? Vyeser Prada, the rest of the details, Mivarim Perik, Rishon Mikrisis, they're all explained in the first Perik of Maseches Krisis. But I guess mitzvah zoshel iser Meshichas Hashemen, v'chol makom shimatzei v'chol zman bizchar munikevo. So anytime that the Shemen is found, then you are not allowed to. But we don't really have Shemen HaMishcha. We don't have Shemen HaMishcha anymore, and we can do without it because when they no longer had the Shemen HaMishcha that Moshe Rabbeinu made, they didn't make a new one. They just didn't use it, so they didn't have. So the king could still be a de facto king without Shemen HaMishcha, and when they would have a Kohen Gadol, they would just have the Kohen Gadol wear all the proper vestments of the Kohen Gadol. And serve as Kohen Gadol, and then that's okay. Shemen Mishcha is not really makiv in anything. It doesn't prevent you from acting properly. It's just the mitzvah you're supposed to do when you have it. The overlay of a sachman of kizayis mezid chayiv karis. If you anoint yourself with an olive's bulk, you're chayiv karis. B'shogei chayiv chatos. If you do it by accident, then you're chayiv a set chatos. Mitzvah kuftes, the 109th mitzvah. Shalola sos maskones shemen hamishcha. You should not make something that has the same proportions recipe as the shemen hamishcha. Shalola sos shemen hamishcha shenemar. We should not make the shemen hamishcha shenemar uv maskun tolo sasu. And you should not make it like its recipe. Mishor shemitzvah, the reasoning why. Mashik kasavnu beisur mishichaso, because we wanted the same reason as you're not allowed to use it for extraneous purposes. We want to keep the shemen hamishcha. Have some mystique about it, some specialness. Inyan haMitzvah, Shamru Zichronim Levracha. The reasoning, not the reason, the idea behind it. Kimi Olam Lo Nasimenu Elo Osu Shasa Moshe Bamidbar. The only Shemen Mishka that was ever made was the one that Moshe Rabbeinu did in the desert. Vamru Shneis Nasibo Shekulo Kayim Lasilavo. There was a miracle that it was all going to be there when we come, when we need it again in the future times. And the stuff that they took out, obviously they used some of it to anoint the Mishkan and the vessels. Habracha Hishlimo. So there was a miracle, and it's like when the story in with Elisha, right, that they went to the woman and she kept pouring oil, and there was the never drained the vessel in which the oil was kept. So that's the same idea with the Shemen Mishka. You're only chayav for making Shemen HaMishcha improperly. You make it with the exact recipe that Moshe Rabbeinu did it. With the exact proportions, the exact amount, etc. Again, the first paragraph of Maseches Krisos. Which is good. These halachos don't fit anywhere else, so you have to put them in the masechta that discusses in general things that your chayav karis for. And Shemen and Mishka is relevant to that. But this is, yeah.
More generally, there's this institute that tries to replicate all
Temple
the
Institute,
Kalim,
yeah.
Don't have to be very careful not to exactly replicate certain things? Or
Well, the Shemen HaMishcha for sure, but yeah. The other Kalim, we have a problem of lo sasun iti. That's a different thing. You're not supposed to make things that look like the Beis HaMikdash. So that's why, like in a shul, we don't have a seven-branch candelabrum, because we're not supposed to have things in the shul that look like we're trying to replicate the Beis HaMikdash. But what will they tell you? So we're not trying to replicate the Beis HaMikdash. This is for the Beis HaMikdash. Of course we're allowed to make it the exact way it's supposed to be.
So the begadim actually are shot nez and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
I guess nobody can try them on then, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nobody can try
Well, only the belt is shot nez, so you could have the Kohen use the other other garments. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. V'noheges mitzvah zo shel isur isiyas Hashemen v'chol makom v'chol zman v'chol zvizchar munikevos. Men and women are both forbidden from making the exact form of the Shemen HaMishcha. This is not the case, by the way, by the Ketores, as we're going to see in a second. You're not supposed to duplicate the Ketores either, but that's even if you do it proportionally. That's even if you don't make the exact amount that the Ktoris used to be done, even if you make something of proportions with the Ktoris, that an incense that follows the same ratio of all ingredients, it's also a problem. But the Sheman HaMishcha, it's not a problem.
Really?
The Sheman HaMishcha has to be the exact amount.
Ingredients.
So that's a good answer to our question, of course, that if you want to try to see how exactly all these things work, you just make a smaller amount. There's no problem. Nope. Oh, putter, right. Maybe you're not supposed to do a lechatchila. You're not supposed to do it, but you're not chayav karis. Right. I take that back. Yes, of course. You're right. 100%. 100%. You don't receive punishment, but you still shouldn't do it. But you can make, if there's something off about it, then you could. Mitzvah Kuf Yud, the 110th mitzvah. Would that read the last line? The overall level, the awesome man of chayav karis, but shogei chayav chadaskua. Same deal. Karis if on purpose and chadaskua by accident. So the 110 mitzvah shalola asos nuas konis haktores, you should not make something with the exact ratio of the, it says use the same word, which is interesting, but it's not the same halacha, the same recipe as the incense. Shalola asos ktores kidmus ktores kilomar shetia harkavoso al inyan oson hamishkolim viskavin lahakter atzmoba. That you shouldn't make incense that you want to use for your own purposes that corresponds to the ratios and a recipe that are in the real Ktoris for the basic Mikdash. Nemar b'maskun tolo sasu lachem. You should not make it in its proportion for yourself. Nemar alea isha asher yaseh kamola riachba. If you make it to smell it, to burn or to cover your marijuana, then you are it's a problem. Kilomar shiskabin basiyosel haktir atzmo. That you want it for your own purposes to make your own, to smell it, and it should be nice. Midine ha-mitzvah. You want the incense of the Beis HaMikdash to be special. So, midine ha-mitzvah, the halachos are as follows. If you're practicing how to make the incense for the Beis HaMikdash, or you just want to practice your skills of incense making, or you intend to give it to the Beis HaMikdash, to the general Jewish community to use, then you're putter. You're not supposed to do it, but you're exempt from punishment. It's only lahariach, but it's only for your own personal use. If you make it for your personal use, then you're chayav karis. Vosa afilu ktsas mena, even if you make a tiny amount, kozman shenasa osa ktsas lafi mishkolis haktoris shechayav, that if you make it according to the proportion of the ingredients in the real ktoris, then you're chayav. Umash amru shaktoris haisa naseis bizman habayis v'chol shana v'shana, in the temple times it was made once a year. That if the person who's making it in the Beis HaMikdash, who's really supposed to be making it, if he leaves out one of the ingredients, then he's chayav misa b'dei shemayim. You don't take him out and shoot him, but he's chayav misa b'dei shemayim. He's technically, he should consider himself as being liable to death. B'yeser proteha, the rest of the details, mevarim b'perek rishon mikrisos. The first perek of krisos, again, all these things that are in krisos. V'noges mitzvah zo, b'shel yisrael yisrael, b'chol makom v'chol zman, all places in all times, v'zicharim v'nekevos. Male and female, v'olver alea v'asa b'men alfi mishkala la'ariachba. If you do it, if you make it according to the proportions in order to smell it, b'meizu chayav karis, you do it on purpose, you're chayav karis, v'shogu chayav chatas koif, to bring a chatas again, v'al ne'riachba, levad, v'lo asa, eino chayav karis. If somebody else makes it, and you go in, even on purpose, and you go and smell it, you're not chayav karis. Eladino, kedin, kol anen, amin ha'ekdash, it's only the person who gets chayav karis, but if somebody who just smells it, is not supposed to be done, because it's sort of like an isser me'ila of sacrilege, getting improper benefit for yourself from kodshim. So you're not allowed to do that, but there wouldn't even be any punishment associated with that, because you wouldn't normally, when you do that, when you receive benefit or you have some pleasure from the something that's holy, something that's for the Beis HaMikdash, so you have to make restitution. But here there's no smell has no substance to it, mm-hmm. So you don't have to make any restitution in this case. It's just forbidden to do so.
You wouldn't have to make a bracha on smelling.
You wouldn't make a bracha because it's bisser, right?